Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Supernatural George. I'm Mittens, and today we're going to be talking about Season 6, Episode 9, Clap Your Hands If You Believe, written by Ben Edlund and directed by John F. Showalter. I chose not to clap my hands because that would probably sound terrible in the microphone. Welcome to the Soulless Sam episode. This is the one I chose to imprint on my brain, probably because it contains multitudes. Just looking at the cosmology here, it introduces us to an entirely new segment of the supernatural world, the Fair Folk, which in criminal fashion, the show as a whole will never fully latch on to the potential of exploring more, leaving aside Robbie Thompson, who will at least give it the old college try in Moondor. It also gives us a peek at the entire concept of alternate hidden universes and beings who have the ability to traverse those borders, which Edlund will exploit again in 615, French Mistake, and which will become a major part of later seasons. Also, quite criminally, this episode will give Dean an ability to see and sense fairies, even when they're hidden from humans, which makes for all sorts of fanfic fodder. See my own works for reference. But also low-key makes the entire rest of the series potentially cracktacular to watch. It kind of makes you wonder how many people Dean sees for the rest of his life who are actually just completely invisible to the rest of humanity. And again, the fact that they never used this in future episodes just makes me incredibly sad. We get all the X-Files references crammed in here, from the opening title sequence. The truth is in there. So many notable quotes. Fight the fairies. You know, like there's so many gift sets from this episode that are just wonderful fandom staples. And some pretty blatant queer innuendo directed at Dean for being able to see the fairies and all of the stuff with his supposedly gay bashing attack on the screaming about fairies and, attacking a guy. But aside from all the fun stuff, we do get a balanced and nuanced look at the morality of Soulless Sam. He's really not a good person without his soul, but he is trying and mostly failing. We're just going to sit back and enjoy this one mostly, because it's a little oasis in the middle of a run of incredibly angsty episodes, followed up by some, like, what I consider the worst little run of Season 6. Spider people, haunted kidney, oh, it's just, what were they? Mannequin 3, oh god, we have those coming up soon. Anyway, so we're going to extra hard enjoy this one. So on that note, let's get to the then segment. We start with a clip of Lisa telling Dean that she didn't expect Sam to come back, but the minute she realized he did, she knew it was over between them. The sort of ghostly overlay shot of Sam looking in Lisa's window from the final episode of last season, looking kind of freaky and off with his weird little smile. Him asking Dean for help, telling him he knows there's something wrong with him. Dean beating the crap out of him. Cass testing Sam for what's wrong with him and discovering he has no soul, and that it's probably still in the cage with Michael and Lucifer. And Cass telling Dean that it's not possible to get his soul back from the cage. And again, I'm editorializing here, but it's just one more thing that makes me realize that there's really no way Cass could have gotten Sam out of the cage at the end of season 5 by himself. And I still think Crowley handed him Sam's body. Because Cass just is, there's no question in him in that shot that there's no way to get Sam's soul out of the cage. And if Crowley couldn't have done it, if Cass and Crowley working together, even setting up this whole plan in motion to use Sam and Samuel to get alphas for their whole campaign here. When Cass does eventually tell Sam, I'm the one who got you out of hell, I don't think he got him out of the cage. And I will stand on that until the end of time. I don't think Cass did that. He may have carried him out of hell, but I don't think he's the one who cage busted him or he would have noticed that he was leaving a piece behind. Back to the then segment, we get Dean telling Sam that he has no instinct, that he's seriously messed up. We get some more shots of Dean beating him in the face. It's like, they keep going back to that. Dean is really not happy with Sam. I think they're trying to tell us that, and very subtly here. And then Dean telling him, I don't know what you are, but it's not Sam. With Sam finally telling Dean, you're right. I'm not really your brother. I'm just pretending, and I don't even really care about you. Maybe I should, but I just don't. And the look on Dean's face is just like, well, I asked for this, but oh my God. And then we come to now, which happens to be Elwood, Indiana, and a truck parked beside a cornfield on a foggy night. And the whole thing is very, very X-Files, right down to how the type appears on the screen, like a computer printing it out. There's a couple making out on a blanket on the ground in front of the truck. The guy sees a strange light, hears a sound or something, and he's like, wait, there's something out there. Yeah, there sure is, kiddo. And the girl's like, don't leave me here, but he goes off into the corn to look. She gets frustrated waiting for him and starts calling out his name and following him into the corn. He doesn't reply to her. He's just like on a mission. Keeps going, keeps going, keeps going. Steps out into a tiny clearing where he's struck by a bright light and disappears. She catches up a moment later, looks around in this weird clearing in the middle of a cornfield, and is completely baffled as to where he went. And then we zoom out. Big crane shot. And it's not just the one little clearing. That's a tiny part of a larger design that looks like some sort of weird sigil drawn in the cornfield. Crop circles. Aliens. And if you didn't get all the X-Files references in the opening, you're certainly going to get them now, because we don't get a title card cut this week. We get a whole opening credits scene that is the most basic knockoff of the X-Files opening credits that you can possibly imagine. Except supernatural style. So we get, like, the slow dancing alien even stuck in there. We get Jared, Jensen, and even Misha holding their fake FBI badges. And at the very end, instead of the truth is out there, we get the truth is in there. And then the episode begins. So in our cold open, some dude just vanishes in a cornfield, and we're supposed to think, by everything about the opening credits, that it's aliens. But being supernatural, of course it can't be aliens. I just love that they had this little tribute to the X-Files, finally, considering how many people who worked on Supernatural also worked on the X-Files. I'm only kind of surprised that it took this long. After the opening credits, I can't even say after the title card because it wasn't. We cut right to some guy talking, and it's almost like a documentary feel. He's talking directly into the camera, talking about how this town is the center of extraterrestrial activity. And it then cuts to a series of people giving their commentary on what they believe it is, like somebody's interviewing them on the streets. We start with the girl from the cold open. It was like there was this light and then Patrick just vanished. Then we see the girl that we will recognize later on in the episode as Sam's little hookup girl, alien chaser lady, who believes the aliens are here to help push humanity to the next level. We then cut back to the first guy who tells us he's personally recorded dozens of eyewitness testimony about lights and presences. And it then cuts to a local cop who's like, it's like the circus is blown into town. Nobody seems to realize that we've still got 4 missing persons cases. And this is becoming a plague on their town. And everybody else is so wrapped up in all the extraterrestrial hullabaloo that they're not paying attention to these actual missing people. We cut back to Patrick's girlfriend, who insists that he was taken. Back to the guy who's so happy to have found this, the first guy we talked to. UFO flap, he's thrilled by it. And then back to the cop who is just angry that it has nothing to do with UFOs or little green men, just missing people. And then it cuts to another woman who's like, it's not aliens. It's fairies. And that is what cuts us to Dean. That was our little record scratch moment. And we see that all along they've been talking to Dean and Sam. And Dean was ready to just dismiss what she said. He thanked her for her input and he quietly thinks she's insane. Fairies. And then Sam is still taking notes. And he can't just turn and walk away from this. He's got no filter. And he just is like, what, UFOs aren't insane enough for you? Sam just goes off. He's like, you can put some glitter in that glue you're sniffing, but don't dump it all over us. Calls her wackadoo, tells her the only thing she's missing is a couple dozen cats. Dean basically has to drag Sam away so he won't just stand there roasting this poor woman. And he's like, what's wrong with you? You even have to ask? And because Sam's like, what? What are you talking about? And then Dean's like, oh, right. Yeah, you do have to ask because you don't have any tact. You don't know how you sound to everybody else who's normal. Sam's like, well, we're not taking this UFO stuff seriously, are we? And Dean's like, of course not. We all know E.T. was a guy in a rubber suit, but we still have to interview all of these people to try and get leads on what is actually vanishing people, because there's 4 vanished people in this town. Something is doing that to them. Not aliens. Clearly not fairies. You know, Dean's like, it's not her fault she took the brown acid. So even Dean doesn't buy UFOs or fairies. And Dean has to explain to Sam that you actually just have to be tactful, show a little empathy for people. And Sam's like, oh, right, because old Sam had a soul or was a soul, whatever. And yeah, that's an interesting point. Is Sam just missing his soul? Or is his soul missing his body? And his body's just going on autopilot. Doesn't sleep, doesn't function like a human body, doesn't really seem to have biological needs. I mean, he clearly needs to, you know, like eat and bathe and stuff like that. At least I think so. It kind of makes me want to think back. Have we seen Soulless Sam eating? Whatever. Anyway, he's still physical body, even if he doesn't sleep. It's an interesting conundrum on what is a human being without a soul? Because that, again, will become relevant in later seasons when other characters have or don't have souls, as it were. Dean implores Sam that he has to care. Sam's like, about what? And Dean's like, about everything. About being human, at least. Like, you have to at least get what is making you different from everybody else right now. And in the direct turnaround from the last run of episodes where Dean has been begging Sam to tell the truth and be honest about who and what he actually is, Dean is now advising him strongly to just fake it. If Sam can't care because he doesn't have a soul, then he should just completely fake it. Sam even points that out when Dean's like, yeah, fake it till you make it. He's like, but you wanted me to be honest. And I was faking it ever since I got back. It was exhausting. I don't want to spend that much effort just to try and fake it. And Dean's like, well, then until you get your soul back, I will be your conscience. And as your conscience, he's telling you, Sam, that you can't just be an asshole to people. Like, it's not hard to not be an asshole, but it is for Soulless Sam. And Sam teases him. He's like, so you'll be my Jiminy Cricket? And the Pinocchio references start. Dean's like, yeah, freaking puppet. But yes, exactly. And Sam will again make Pinocchio references later in this episode when he refers to the blue fairy, the potential savior of his soul. At least that's the offer that this leprechaun will make him at the end. So at least we know he's processing what Dean is telling him and he's trying to work with it. But it's kind of like trying to speak a foreign language with only a badly written translation guide that kind of only gets you in the neighborhood of what you need to say. I'm thinking of Monty Python now and the stupid Hungarian phrase book. I will not buy this tobacconist. It is scratched. Anyway, he's not able to generate compassion, caring, all the things that we always think of as being very Sam. He's very compassionate. He's very understanding. He's very sensitive about other people's feelings. And he's good at talking to other people, but not without his soul. I just appreciate this nuanced look at Sam, that he's not just a bad person. He's not evil. He's just amoral. And Dean is trying his best to just educate Sam on the baseline of what he expects from Sam acting at least human passing, especially when it comes to working their cases. Sam might have been fine with burning bridges with every witness he talked to when he was alone working hunting, but with Dean, the seat of your pants, burn every bridge as you walk across it tack is not going to work for Dean. We then cut to Brennan's watchmaker shop, where an older man is repairing watches. Sam and Dean enter, and again use the cover that they're reporters, who want to ask him some questions, and the old man looks a little bit shaken. Apparently this is Patrick's father, and Patrick was the first one to disappear, the one we saw in that cornfield in the cold open. Three other people have disappeared since. He's dismissive of them when they try to ask questions and goes back to his work. He's like, Patrick's gone. And Dean's like, yes, missing. Yes, we'd like to ask you some things about that. And he corrects them and says he was the first to be taken. That perks their interest. This guy clearly knows more about what's going on. That Patrick didn't just go missing. He was taken. Their interest, however, hits a nerve in Mr. Brennan. He tells them to get out and starts leading them to the door. Sam presses, though. He's like, you know something about what's happened. Why would you say they're taken? And keeps pushing. Finally, Mr. Brennan snaps, and he's like, Patrick's not coming back. Sam's like, you sound awfully sure about that. And Dean can see Sam starting to get single-minded again and undiplomatic, let's call it, and tries to hold Sam back. Sam's convinced that he knows more that he's not telling them. Brennan tries to brush it off as, well, you know, they say after 72 hours, their chances of being found again drop to zero, right? Well, it's been weeks since Patrick disappeared. But Sam is clearly unconvinced that there's not something deeper here. And I think Dean is too. But Dean at least has the tact to step back and find another way to find out what this guy might know. Sam refuses, like a dog with a bone, refuses to let it go. But at least he's following Dean's lead. As soon as Sam and Dean are gone, though, Brennan turns to the room at large, kind of scared looking, and is like, is that all right? And across the room, a pocket watch on a chain starts twisting back and forth, as if that was his answer. As soon as they're outside, Sam asks Dean, so what do we think? Like, he needs Dean's confirmation on what's actually going on. So he's actually taking Dean's advice, at least to a degree, to be his conscience. He's following Dean's lead. He's really trying. Dean believes that the guy is definitely hiding something. They're not at all on different pages regarding this guy's suspicion. Dean tells Sam to stay on the watchmaker, watch him, but under no circumstances engage him in any way, maim or kill him. Dean's gonna go check out the crop circles. He's like, don't do anything. Don't make any judgment calls at all. Just call me before you do anything. And Sam's like, you know, I was on my own for a whole year. I can think for myself. I'm perfectly capable of functioning on my own. I was fine. Dean's just like, yeah, but I don't want to know what your definition of fine is. Unfortunately for everybody, though, Sam is going to be forced to be left on his own. By the time Dean gets to the cornfield and finds the crop circle, it's after dark. He wanders out into the open clearing when his phone starts to ring, and it's Sam. Sam has followed the watchmaker to a bar where apparently the only thing he's up to is alcoholism, Sam presses Dean, like, maybe I should go talk to him. Somebody should talk to him. He's clearly hiding something. And Dean shushes Sam, because in the distance we see Baby's headlights go out, and then we hear the engine stutter and fail. He'd left the car running as a light source, and now he's just out there in the dark. Something is clearly out there with him. Dean pulls out his gun. He's like going wide-eyed as a bright light appears and looks like it's coming from a even brighter light hovering in the sky above the field. Then the light starts closing in on Dean. He just starts screaming, UFO! UFO! And running into the corn to hide from it. Sam just calmly and with zero empathy says, Whoa, stop yelling. You're breaking up. I didn't catch that last part. And Dean's just still yelling, close encounter, close encounter. And one of my favorite lines in the episode, because there's a lot of them. Sam so calmly asks, oh, what kind? First, second? Dean just yells, they're after me. And Sam's like, ooh, third kind already. You better run. I hear the fourth kind's a butt thing. That gif has come in so handy over the years. As Dean scolds Sam to have some empathy, Sam just holds up a finger to order another beer and is like, yeah, whatever. Dean has finally run out of places to run, though. The light catches up with him. He drops his phone in the cornfield and is prepared to defend himself as the light hits him and he vanishes into it. Meanwhile, Sam is on the phone still going, Dean, are you there? And hangs up. And then accepts his beer from the waitress and smiles at her flirtatiously, watches her walk away in a way that is reminiscent of Dean watching waitresses walk away. Not a care in the world, because he doesn't have a care in the world. He has no soul to care with. And I really like this way of demonstrating it with something that's less angsty and ominous, like the Spider People episode will be. Even though that's just in flashbacks, I freaking hate the Spider People, okay? I'm already dreading having to talk about it for an hour. So, you know. Anyway, let's talk about this one now. It uses humor and something slightly less serious. I don't know if that's the right word I'm going for here, but I appreciate the effort at dealing with these really heavy topics in a way that's sort of a little bit fluffier. We cut back to the cornfield later that night, where Dean's phone starts ringing as someone walks up to it. It's Sam calling Dean's phone, trying to find him. Nothing chases Sam through the cornfield, so it's not just attacking everybody willy-nilly. Didn't attack Patrick's girlfriend, you know? So what's the criteria for who it's taking? As we cut to the beginning of the next scene, we see a meteor streak across the sky and slowly pan down back to Earth, as the Close Encounters of the Third Kind music is playing in this caravan of campers who are there trying to get a glimpse of the UFO and the aliens. Sam walks into their camp. There's a lot of wacky-doo people there. But he goes to the band that they had spoken to in the cold open, the very first guy we saw at the beginning of the episode. And Sam's like, so they're real. And the guy's like, the truth is out there, son, like I said earlier. Sam just matter-of-factly says, so, how do I get them? And the guy's like, what are you talking about? Sam's like, you hunt ETs, right? How do I do that? And the guy just laughs. And a girl sitting in a converted school bus across the way is watching their interactions and comes over just to observe Sam up close, I guess. As he pages through the pamphlet that UFO dude hands him and is like, so that's all you got? And the man is like, gets defensive about this. 30 years of eyewitness testimony is incontrovertible proof. And Sam's like, I get that. Yeah, but my brother's been abducted. So what can I do to get him back? The woman's like, oh my God, your brother was abducted? Sam's like, yeah, but it's okay. I've had time to adjust. She's like, oh, what? Did it happen when you were kids? And he's like, no, like half an hour ago. Sam just kind of ignores her for the moment because he's too busy chewing this guy a new one. You've been hunting UFOs for 30 years and you have no concrete data and zero workable leads, let alone information about how to hunt one down, trap one, kill one, force it to do your bidding, whatever. And the guy just looks at Sam like, have you considered the possibility that you suck at hunting aliens? And then he just turns on his heel and starts to walk away. But the woman follows him. She tells Sam that she'd like to help if she can. And Sam gives her a flirtatious smile. He's got no other leads. His best lead possible just failed miserably. How is he supposed to get his brother back from the aliens now? Well, he can take this woman back to his motel room. And then we cut back to the cornfield where wind picks up, a light shines back down again, and then spits Dean out, who's still firing his gun. For him, this has only been a few seconds. He walks all the way back into town to their motel room to walk in on Sam in bed with this woman. And he's offended. As she gets dressed and leaves, she's cannot resist asking Dean what it was like to have been abducted by a UFO. He's exhausted and frustrated. He tells her they were grabby incandescent douchebags. Good night. And she gets it. She's like, yeah, it's a bad time, isn't it? And leaves. And she's so cute. I kind of wish she'd turned up again at some point. Just, you know, got over the whole alien thing and maybe got into some other weirdness that ran across them again. Because she's just the right kind of weird for this show. Dean is mad at Sam, though. Sam can't process why. Dean's like, I was abducted by aliens, and you were back here just banging this girl. Sam's like, I was working on it. Dean's like, I was only gone for an hour. How are you working on it? You know, most of that hour was him walking back to town from the cornfield. And Sam's like, what are you talking about? You were gone all night. He holds up his phone and it says it's 4:07 a.m. And Sam is excited by this. He's like, time skips. That's part of the lore. So he actually was doing some research on UFOs and alien abductions. He at least read the pamphlet that guy gave him. And I just got to pause to point out the decor in this motel room. The divider screen is cartoon ears of corn. And the pictures above each bed, above Sam's bed, is a picture of a bison. And then above Dean's bed is a bald eagle in front of an American flag. So patriotic. He's got the true spirit in him or something. I don't know. Sam hands Dean a glass of whiskey, tells him to drink, refills his glass, hands it back. So at least he's empathetic on that level, on the mechanical, physical level, understanding that this whiskey will make Dean feel a little better, appease him in some way. And then Sam sits down across from him and is like, okay, tell me what happened. And Dean's struggling to tell this story. He's trying to process and put it into words. And to Sam's credit, at least we'll give him partial credit for this, he is trying to show empathy to Dean, but he has like no clue how to do it. This is not part of Sam's muscle memory. And he puts a hand on Dean's knee, like thinking that's a fortifying thing to do and a reassuring thing. And tells Dean, it's okay, safe room. Dean just looks at him like, the hell are you talking about? Stop it. And Sam's like, okay, and takes his hand away. Dean describes what he saw there as in this other place, as beings that were too bright to look at, drawing him towards this table. Sam's like, oh, probing table? Dean's like, don't say that out loud. Like, Dean knows what he was in for, and he fought back, firing his gun and slashing at these beings. And he starts laughing a little bit, like really uncomfortable laughter, like, I don't think they were expecting that. It kind of took them off guard. He's actually borderline proud of himself for this. He's like, I don't think anyone's ever actually tried that before. I had a close encounter and I won. Like, he's got to take something positive away from this experience. So yeah, he won. They sent him back. They spit him back out. They're like, we don't want this in our realm. This thing is hurting us. The next day, the two of them are back in a cafe discussing this, and Dean is still marveling at this. On top of everything else, angels, demons, ghosts, aliens are real too. What's next? Hobbits? And it's like, these are actually probably closer to hobbits than you think, Dean. As Dean's talking, though, Sam's not even paying attention. He's flirting with their waitress. Probably the same waitress he was flirting with the previous night when Dean was taken. But Dean calls Sam out on this. He's like, I cannot believe you. Our reality is collapsing around us and you're trying to bang the waitress? And Sam once again tries to ask a question about what to do if you have a soul. How would someone with a soul react in this circumstance? If your brother's been abducted by aliens and you've exhausted every lead you have for the night, are you supposed to just sit there in the dark and suffer? Why can't I do this other thing, this opportunity that presented itself to me to have sex with this woman? And Dean is like, yes, yes, you sit in the dark and you feel the loss. Dean insists that he couldn't because he would be suffering, and you can't just turn that off for the night. Can you imagine Dean going out and picking up a waitress if Sam had been the one abducted by aliens? No. But Sam is legitimately trying to do the math on this one, even though this is not at all a math problem. He's simplified it down to having a soul is equal to suffering. And Dean thinks about that for a second and comes to the conclusion that, rather than go into a whole lecture about this, yes, that's exactly what I'm saying. And Sam's like, right, like the million times you almost called Lisa. Like, he's just putting this together now that Dean struggled with that and was conflicted about it and had emotional feelings about it. And it pained him and he suffered over it. And Sam could not process why he was doing that. And he's trying to understand why suffering would be a good thing. And Dean's like, I'm just saying, it's the only game in town. If you have a soul, you are going to feel emotional loss, pain, and suffering. But, you know, they're not talking about the profound joy, love, hope, and every good human emotion that Sam is missing out on as well. You know, just the suffering that he doesn't understand that there's a normal human reaction to suffering or to things that cause suffering, and why that would be a valuable thing to understand. Dean stands up to pay the check and leave, and Sam's like, okay, so how do we go about dealing with these little green men? Dean's like, well, we've got about a century of lore to catch up on. And he turns around, and outside the window, he sees a guy in a red knit cap just glaring at him through the window. Dean asks Sam what's up with that guy giving him the stink eye. And Sam's like, what, the cop? Who's sitting inside the diner by the window. And Dean's like, no, not the cop. And he turns back around and the guy is gone. But Sam never saw him at all, it would appear. Dean's frustrated by Sam's lack of acknowledgement or understanding, as Sam still continues to be like, what guy? What are you talking about? What's wrong with you? Dean's just like, can we just get out of here before I hit you? Later that evening, Sam has been at the library looking up books on UFOs. He's finding way too much to possibly read through and research. Everyone on the planet believes in aliens, apparently, and everybody's written books about it. Meanwhile, Dean's back in their motel room on the internet, looking up all sorts of stuff online, and is equally swamped. Which leads right into one of my favorite scenes in the entire series. I have not been able to listen to David Bowie's Space Oddity again since I first saw this episode without picturing this entire scene playing out. So for over a decade now, my brain has just been poisoned by this scene in the best possible way. Dean versus the Tinkerbell fairy with the tiny nipples. Microwaves are ding. It's still just a beautiful scene. Trying to talk about it in any way is honestly going to ruin it for me. I will say, this is another moment where Dean's whole I see queer people. I see fairies. Parallel is being made. Sam can't see any of it. Dean can see all of it. Dean can't understand why Sam can't see it. And I've seen this used as a queer metaphor, like gaydar kind of for Dean. Or conversely, applied to us, the fans, who saw this queer subtext in the entire series, who saw Destiel in the entire series and got told there's nothing there to see. It's like, we're looking at it and it's the ech, it's the blech. We're not missing it. It's you're not seeing it. Anyway, Sam's inability to care about anything is actually making him pivot to a totally new theory almost immediately, one he dismissed at face value before, mocked the woman for. He hears Dean's description of what attacked him, this little tiny glowing naked lady who hit him, and he doesn't laugh. More power to Sam for not laughing at that. But then Sam starts saying, did she have wings? And Dean's like, why would you say that? And Sam gets really excited, and he's like, this is one of the crazier theories that I've come across. What crazy crystal lady was saying about fairies? And Dean gets indignant about this. Fairies? Like, that's somehow worse than aliens. Sam says that in his research, he's learned that these abductions have been going on for hundreds of years. We just have changed the terminology about them, that fairies and extraterrestrials, their abductions follow a lot of the same signs and patterns of glowing lights and things like that, that it makes perfect sense, actually. Sam is encouraged by this simply because it's actually a lead that they can follow. Right back to the crazy fairy lady that they insulted at the beginning of the episode. And thank goodness Dean had the sense and tact to drag Sam away before he said anything worse and had made an excuse for them, because now they go crawling back to her for info. And she's enthusiastic enough about her love of fairies to welcome them in and give them her views and perspectives. She even serves them tea in tiny cups and cookies. Dean points to a little statue of a Tinkerbell and is like, I get that's a fairy, but what about all these other ones? She's got little figurines and statues all over her home that Dean is confused. Like, they're all fairies, this garden gnome and this troll and all these other things. And she's like, yes. But Sam figures that it's like a whole other dimension. Just like our dimension has all sorts of beings and creatures in it, not just people. Fairies are the same. And she also clarifies why Dean was able to see the guy by the window and the blech in the microwave, because only people who have been to fairy and been returned can see the fairies here, which is why Sam can't see them. It's not a factor of him being soulless and unable to see them, just that he's never been to fairy and back. Dean's been granted some sort of magical vision to be able to see them. The fact that they never use this later in the series is frankly criminal. And she goes on to basically explain every question that they've had about what is actually going on here. Fairies only take firstborn sons, and that clarifies it for Dean, why they took him and not Sam. And then Dean is hate-crimed by soulless Sam when she tells them that she believes that the firstborn sons are taken to Avalon to service Oberon, king of the fairies. And Sam asks if Dean serviced Oberon, king of the fairies. Dean just looks at Sam for a moment and then redirects into a completely new line of questioning, but he looks really shaken and uncomfortable. And we know that he was only in fairy for as long as it took to fire a few shots and slash a few fairies. Like, they didn't quite get him up to that altar or whatever that they were dragging him toward. So, did he service Oberon, king of the fairies? How long was he really in fairy? Who knows? Dean, though, needs to redirect this conversation. He asks her, okay, so fairies are real. How do we... And he holds up his hands like almost in a strangulating motion. Like, he wants to ask so desperately, how do we kill them? Yet he doesn't want to upset this woman who clearly would be offended at the idea that they were going to use this knowledge to go out and hunt and kill fairies. He lets her finish the sentence and she chooses interact with them. And Dean's like, yes, yes, how do we do that? He asks her as she gives suggestions for how to interact more forcefully with them. She suggests they leave cream out for fairies because they love that. Fairies don't like iron, and dark fairies are burned when they're touched with silver. And all fairies, no matter how powerful, have to stop if you spill salt or sugar on the ground and count every grain. And as they're drinking from these tiny teacups, Sam says, do you have bigger cups? And apparently that's an ad lib. Jared just made that up on the spot. But yeah, they're very, very tiny cups. As they're leaving, Dean's like, oh my God, I feel like I've got the crazy on me. And it makes him want to believe in UFOs again because it was less crazy than this. Sam suggests that, you know, they could always put the call out to Bobby to help them out with this one. And Dean sees across the way the watchmaker loading crates of cream into the back of his car from a grocery store. And all of a sudden, they have yet another lead. In one fell swoop, they found out exactly what he's hiding from them and confirmed Crazy Fairy Lady's information that they got. It's all true. Dean leaves Sam in the car to keep an eye on Brennan while Dean goes to check out his store. Dean breaks in via the back door in the alley, quietly creeps inside, and sees something that he almost cannot believe. He even leans back around the corner and sticks his head out again like, am I hallucinating this? There's a bunch of tiny little people working in the shop. One of them's drinking out of a little saucer of cream. Dean's seeing these fairies, and they are running this guy's watchmaker shop. Once again, Sam is back at the watchmaker's favorite bar, watching him drink from across the room, and Dean calls him and lets him know the whole place is full of fairies. Dean makes the connection to the fairy tale about the cobbler who makes a deal with elves to save his business. Dean's like, you think that's what this guy did? His eyes bug out for a second, like he can't believe he's even suggesting this out loud in public, but yes, that's what he thinks is going on. Poor Dean is losing it that he's learned that fairies exist, that he can see them and Sam can't. He's freaking out about this, and Sam is in no position to be comforting at all about any of this or supportive about any of it in a way that Dean really could have used during this episode. Sam is just like completely emotionally unavailable just by the nature of being soulless. Sort of sums up how Dean's been all season long, how Dean's been since Sam walked away from him at Lisa's at the end of season 5. But Sam is going to do his best to get what his brother needs. You know, he may not feel emotionally about it, but he can feel practically about it. And he's going to defy Dean's advice to stay the hell away from the guy, just keep eyes on him. And he's going to be rather direct in asking for answers. He's going to be demanding answers in the most callous and cruel possible way. Sam is rather cavalier in being cruel, because how does a father trade his son for a bunch of watches to get these elves to work for him? Sam even throws out, I'm assuming you have a soul, so what's your excuse? And the guy's like, it wasn't like that. He was essentially tricked. He did not understand when he made the deal that what the fairies were asking as payment for their help was literally his child. Meanwhile, out on the street, across the street in front of a taxidermy shop, Dean notices the man with the red cap from earlier. I'm assuming the guy is a red cap. The red cap across the street just starts mirroring Dean when Dean turns and starts walking the other way. So does the red cap. Back in the bar, Brennan the watchmaker starts explaining to Sam what drove him to ask the fairies for help. His business was failing. because he was diagnosed with Parkinson's and was losing the use of his hands. But his grandmother taught him how to summon fairies when he was a child. He didn't even think it would work when he tried it out of desperation. He wanted the fairies to cure his hands so that he could continue to work, and the fairies offered him one better. They will save his business, bring a whole crew of workers to work for him, make him more successful than he's ever been. All they ask for is a safe place to rest and to take of the fruit and the fat of the land. And stupidly, he agreed. He didn't understand what they were really asking for. The fruit and fat of the land was firstborn sons, not just his own, but others that they would come across, including now Dean, who has a target on him. And that's why he's been horrified. It's not just his own son. The fairies are not going to stop. And he doesn't have a way to reverse the spell because they have taken the book with the spell in it. But just like Dean, this guy can also see the fairies. And Sam is wondering how he can use that to break into the shop and steal that book and reverse the spell and send all the fairies back where they belong. Meanwhile, back out on the street, the Red Cap is now actively following Dean, and he's looking more and more like a prey animal. We even get a little bit of like steady cam shot on Dean. Jensen's probably holding the camera as they shoot this one. Very Blair Witch Project scene of him just eyes bugged out running down the street. And he cuts into an alley, and Dean's so in prey mode instead of predator mode that he usually is in that he doesn't even think to like just stop, get out a weapon, confront this guy. Dean knows he's being followed, suspects heavily that this guy is one of the fairies, and yet doesn't turn and confront him. It's like he's so scared he's not even formulating a plan that regular Dean would just turn around and shank the guy, draw a weapon, or whatever. He waits until he's all the way at the other side of the alley, like back on a public street. He's pretty sure that there's nobody else behind him except the fairy dude. And he hides and waits and tackles the next person who walks out of the alley, who is not the fairy at all, but this town's tiniest DA. This immediately draws a crowd. Dean attacking this small person, calling him a fairy, asking him what he wants. When a little girl shouts, "Daddy!" And Dean turns and sees this man's entire family standing on the sidewalk, all dressed up fancy like they were going out to dinner. Dean comes to his senses and realizes this is not the Red Cap he saw in the alley. This is just some guy. Dean tries to brush it off despite there being a huge crowd of people there staring at him as he lets the guy go. He's like, "Ah, I'm just kidding." And God, Dean, you could have come up with something better. Like, "Oh my God, I thought he was somebody else. He was somebody stalking me in the alley." He just does not do a good job of explaining it because he is that rattled. He is so off his game right now. Sam just then tries to call Dean, letting him know that he's got information. He's got the whole story, in fact, from Brennan the Watchmaker. He's assuring Brennan that he and his brother are going to protect him, not to worry about it. And they see a commotion across the street. And it's Dean getting arrested for assaulting this guy. And Sam calls out, "What am I supposed to do? Like, you're supposed to be my Jiminy Cricket, right? You're supposed to tell me what to do. I'm not supposed to make any moves without you." And Dean is angry now. He's just like, "You fight those fairies." I mean, this is what fairies do, right? They trap you with words, with deeds, with actions. Their rules are very tricksy, and they'll ensnare you into a situation under false pretenses, like they did the poor watchmaker, claiming his son is their prize and framing it as something completely different. Well, now this Red Cap has framed Dean and taken him out of play, got them right where they want him, trapped in jail. Meanwhile, in jail, the police officer is asking Dean what kind of hate crime this even was. Why were you attacking this man, calling him a fairy? Like, is this some sort of gay thing? Dean's the one who's been hate-crimed here. And because there is no way to explain what is actually going on here without sounding like an insane person, Dean comes off sounding like an insane person. And he's left to rot in jail overnight. Meanwhile, back at the watchmaker's place, he and Sam are cautiously going to fight those fairies. We first see the view of his room from Sam's point of view, where there's just like spilled bowl of cream on the floor and another one sitting on a shelf. And Sam has to ask him if they're there. The watchmaker's like, oh yeah, but shh. Cream hits him like tequila. And then we see it from his point of view, and there's these little guys just passed out everywhere. Sam stands guard while the man goes to his safe, gets out the book, and immediately begins reading out the spell that will send the fairies back. Only gets a line or two in before a knife comes pushing through the man's chest from behind, because of course Sam could not see the fairy who stabbed him in the back, killing him before he could send him back. And then he appears to Sam, and Sam recognizes him. It's the guy he accused of being terrible at hunting aliens. He was never trying to hunt aliens. He was just putting the story around as cover for what's actually happening. His fairies. The leprechaun, as it turns out, lets Sam know that he had to kill the guy because he went back on his deal. The deal was that they get to stay. And he broke that deal, trying to send them back. Sam accuses the leprechaun of being unclear about his terms of the deal, and the leprechaun insists he knew there was a price. Sam tells the leprechaun that his cover is blown now, and the leprechaun laughs. He's like, to whom? Brennan's dead. Your brother is ours now. He's marked by us. He's been to our realm. The leprechaun tells Sam, but you can only see me if I let you, and he disappears. And Sam's a little bit shaken, but he just starts immediately re-aiming his gun. He's not rattled the way Dean was. And the leprechaun realizes, you're not like the rest of them, are you? You're missing a certain bit. And I mentioned this a while ago in a post. I don't think I mentioned it actually in the podcast, but it's kind of stunning that in the year that Sam was hunting on his own, no other monsters or creatures sensed exactly what was wrong with him until Veritas noticed that, you know, she didn't know what was wrong with him or that something was missing, that just that he could lie to her, and that shocked her. Then the alpha vampire grasped on to what Sam was lacking immediately, knew it was his soul that was missing, because vampires prey on human beings, and, you know, they could probably sniff out a soul in ways that non-predators just can't. So it kind of makes me wonder if it just took the alpha to recognize what it was, because angels don't seem to have known, demons didn't seem to have noticed, or didn't care. Or didn't tell Sam deliberately. But only now do they seem to be running into creature after creature who can identify what exactly it is that's missing from Sam. The fairy can sense energy. They're all about energy. And a soul gives off a certain frequency of energy, and Sam just lacks that entirely. And the leprechaun confidently tells Sam that he can get Sam's soul back for him. Sam thinks it's ridiculous that a leprechaun could do what angels couldn't, and the leprechaun laughs at this. His magic comes from a different realm entirely. The cage is nothing to him. It was built to contain an angel, not leprechauns. Just as the fairies in this episode have proved thus far, they're tricksy. He phrases it as, we have a way of getting in back doors. Sam believes him. Maybe this guy actually could. But without Dean there, Sam tells him, no way. I'm not making a deal with you because you want me to trade the lives of innocent people in exchange for that. You want me to let you stay here, and that's not going to happen. So it's a tough moral quandary, but Sam chooses, even without his Jiminy Cricket. Sam shoots the fairy with iron buckshot, and he cringes a bit, and he's like, ooh, painful, but not a deal breaker, like he's still going to offer Sam the deal. And Sam fires again, but misses because the fairy has disappeared again. Meanwhile, across town in the jail cell, Dean hears a strange noise, and then right next to him, the red cap has appeared on his cot and starts flinging him around the jail cell. As we cut back to Sam, getting flung around the watchmaker's studio. There's a break in the action in the fight, and Sam goes to retrieve his gun again, and the leprechaun says, "Come on, Sam, you've already taken your best shot." And Sam throws the gun down, and he's like, "You're right, I have. So do me a favor and count this." And he breaks open a salt round and drops the salt all over the ground. And the leprechaun is pissed at this. He throws his walking stick down and angrily gets to his knees and starts counting salt grains on the ground. Sam is like exhausted, beaten, bloodied, and just relieved. And he's like, "God, I wish I'd thought of that earlier." And completely against his will, he just sits there counting salt while Sam recites the spell and banishes him and all the other fairies back to their realm. The next day, Sam and Dean are sitting out on the hood of Baby parked out by a deserted farm road in the middle of nowhere, drinking a beer, toasting the DA who dropped the charges against Dean. Dean wonders if the leprechaun really could have retrieved Sam's soul for him, and Sam scoffs at the idea, and then asks Sam why he said no, and Sam frames it as, it was a deal, and deals are never a good thing. It's never worked out well in our favor. Dean tells Sam that he's just trying to figure out how everything works in there, and Sam's like, "My brain probably works better now." And I don't think it does, Sam. You just have no filter and no moral compass. And that's what Dean is trying to understand. They're talking on two different pages of the book here. And Dean clarifies it as, "I'm just making sure that's where your head's at, that you do still want your soul back, that you're not having second thoughts about it." And Sam brushes that off. He says no, he's not having second thoughts. But the camera lingers on him as we get a couple of downturned notes on strings, letting us know that something ominous is coming and that Sam might actually be wrestling with that thought. And that's where the episode ends. And really, the main takeaway here is the view of morality and our understanding of Sam and Dean's respective moral compasses, emotional cores, and what's lacking in Sam compared to how he normally is. And it's just laid out really gently and kindly, wrapped in this slightly humorous, tongue-in-cheek, reference-filled homage to the X-Files, and just the wackadoo potential of Supernatural as a universe to play in. And again, it's just criminal that they never brought this concept back of fairies and the fact that Dean can see them when others can't. And they could have had so much fun once every season or two, even. Just bring it back at some point in the series. It would have been fun anyway. Just a reminder that Dean has this ability that very few people on the planet do. It could have been fun. For once, Dean could be the one seeing things that Sam can't, instead of Sam having visions or Sam getting psychic vibes or whatever. It's just something that I cling to fondly about Dean. Anyway, I don't know how much more there really is to say about this one, other than the reminder that in addition to my tag having a lot of fun posts to read about this episode, there's not a lot of like deep stuff, but there's a lot of fun stuff in there. There's also a commentary track on the DVD where you can listen to, I believe it's Ben Edlund, Sarah Gamble, and Bob Singer commentating on this episode, if you'd like to hear their thoughts about it. But other than that, character development and just the space to step back and take a little breath and just see where they're at mentally, emotionally, there's not really more to take away here. The ominous threat that maybe Sam doesn't want his soul back kind of stands out right there at the end. But it helps us, like, grind through some of the frustration that both of them have been experiencing all season long. Sam at having to keep up this act of humanity and not being very good at it. Dean no longer afraid of Sam, but just kind of fed up with having to babysit him through everything. And they're both just about at the end of their rope, I think. Honesty or not, soul or no, Dean's gonna see through Sam's hesitation about getting his soul back sooner than later, and it's all gonna come boiling to a head by the end of the next episode, which will lead us right into the bad situation in 611, which is, I often cite as my favorite episode of the entire series, so I'm looking forward to the next two anyway, including next week's season 6 episode 10, Caged Heat. Some good stuff in there. Anyway, I know people talk about hating on season 6, but man, I kind of like it. There's a lot to explore, especially on a rewatch. Like I said, first time you watch season 6, having no idea what's going on most of the season, and then never trying to think about it again after the fact, I think a lot of people skip over a lot of the character development and character exploration that happens in this season. And it's good, and I like it. Anyway. Until then, you can find me on Tumblr at MittensMorgul or at SPNGeorge. You can find me on Discord at MittensMorgul, or you can email me at MittensMorgul@gmail.com. And I look forward to talking to everybody again real soon. I don't even know what else to say other than I really do enjoy this episode. And I kind of enjoy season 6 as a whole. And I don't think it's all that incoherent. And the more times that I've watched it, the more coherent it looks. And I kind of think that's the real flaw of season 6, is that you have to be really familiar with it to kind of see the bigger picture and not just balk at everything as being, you know, on the fly, mind-changing and dropped plot lines and stuff, because it all just sort of feeds into it. It's just like a giant meat grinder that just is chewing up the plot because it has a destination. And it's just getting rid of pieces that it doesn't want in its story anymore. And it's such a very, in retrospect, from way far down the line, such a very Chuck thing to do, isn't it? Clear the table. Just kick things to the floor and see what shakes out. I mean, it's not great as a long-term storytelling technique, and it would have been better over like a 3-episode arc or something, but, you know, it is what it is. And at least eventually we get back to, you know, not trying to kill Cass off for plot reasons. Anyway, have a good one, everyone.